If it sounds good to Andy, that's all that matters.
It is sounding pretty good to me.
Okay.
So we can get started.
Passes the Andy test.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 152 for October 10th, 2008. On today's show, BioWare and LucasArts have something special planned. What could it be? Blizzard announces a new Diablo 3 class at BlizzCon. Ubisoft says End War may hit PC, but later. Portal Prelude goes live. EA cans Tiberium. Google moves into web-based game ads. AMD breaks up, and your questions. Stay tuned. Okay, everybody, sorry for the tardiness. We were a little bit busy yesterday putting the finishing touches on our holiday issue with reviews of Fallout 3, Far Cry 2, Red Alert 3, Warhammer Online, Dead Space, Lego Batman, and a whole bunch of other stuff that, yeah, kept us very, very busy. So we had to postpone the podcast for a day. I am your host, Dan Stapleton. We've got editor-in-chief Kristen Salvatore.
Holiday!
Our senior or our executive editor Logan Decker.
I'm back.
And
I've accidentally Interstellar War.
My goodness, Logan's Death Star just went off. Sorry.
Yeah, I hate when that happens. And then there's our associate editor Evan Lottie.
Hello.
And our podcast producer Andy Bauman.
My head exploded when you described all the reviews that you're doing.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is that time of year, isn't it? It's like everybody wants to be out there at the same time. So it seems like everybody's like really eager to be on shelves at the same time, which seems like kind of a bad idea because then you're competing against all the really big games. It's like maybe put it out a little bit earlier, maybe a little later. So it might be a better idea. I don't know.
If you had to guess a game that's going to get overlooked because of this year, what do you think it would be?
That's a good question.
It depends on your priorities because, yeah, you know, a lot of people, like I like to play, you know, a little bit of everything. But, you know, my priorities are going to be, you know, like Red Alert 3, Fallout 3, because, you know, I like me some RTSs and some RPGs/shooters. So.
Yes.
I fear that Dead Space may get lost a bit because it's kind of console-y, you know, and there's just so much great PC stuff, you know, Fallout 3. Especially, you know, that I fear that might get kind of lost in the shuffle.
Peggle Knights.
Oh
no, because I've already played it.
Peggle.
Yeah, that beat the rush.
Yeah, it's in there.
But what game are you most looking forward to, Andy?
Up until now, it was Fallout 3. But I think Red Alert 3.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you an RTS guy by nature?
You know, not like 100%, but I definitely try and play as many as I can. It's just that it seems like lately I don't have the time to sit down and learn all the new mechanics of each one. But in the olden days, I was like such an RTS guy.
Is it fair to say then that this may be the RTS for you?
Exactly.
Dan? Well, not necessarily. It does change some mechanics.
Oh, okay.
It's not like I went back and looked over our Red Alert 2 review. You know, when I started doing this one, and like one of the complaints in there is that it's pretty much exactly like Red Alert 1 except with a few new things added and like all the mechanics are the same. They did not do that this time. They changed up a bunch of stuff. I can't go into it too much because there is an embargo on the review until like the 18th or whatever. But they did change quite a few things.
But I feel like I haven't played the game yet, and you can, and I'm sure will correct me if I'm wrong. But I sort of get the impression that the Red Alert games are kind of really accessible strategy games, maybe for people who aren't kind of grognardy strategy game players. Is it just the trappings, maybe more than the actual gameplay?
Well, it's again, they are and they aren't kind of situation because the gameplay is very fast. So if you want to play online, you're going to get crushed if you're not an experienced player and you go up against somebody who is, you're going to get absolutely crushed. There's no point in even playing. So, but you know it does ramp you up. You know, it's just like any good RTS should. It ramps up the difficulty as you go.
I think the the kind of cheesy context they're integrating with the full motion video stuff, kind of the return of, you know, the Soviets and the U.S. and all the actors and the cast that they brought in, kind of adds some accessibility, though, just the context of the different factions and how it's just very played up that the Soviets are very Soviet and the U.S. is very, you know, American Army Marines, and the Japanese are have, you know, walking mechs and robots and stuff. So
and schoolgirls.
Tim Curry's in it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that in terms of accessibility, the thing that adds is that there are a bunch of actors that you will recognize. I mean, you'll recognize Tim Curry, you'll recognize George Takei, who was, you know, Sulu on Star Trek, and he was on Heroes.
Well, isn't it kind of funny and campy? Like those are not words that you ordinarily would ordinarily use to describe an RTS.
Right. Well, exactly. I mean, it's a very, you know, tongue in cheek kind of thing. I mean, it's ridiculously over the top. Some of the briefings, the dialogue in there, are just hilarious. So but that doesn't really make it any more accessible. It just makes it funnier.
Well, I mean, it's sort of like puts a damper on me, and I mean, maybe not a damper, but like it can be a competitive and challenging experience while being lighthearted to some extent, while being more fun than just intense, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right, yeah. You know, it's not for people that want to, you know, like play in a deadly serious universe. You know, it's not that at all.
I just have such fond
memories. Too busy doing that on a daily basis.
You can say the same thing about Fallout, though, because that universe is not deadly serious either.
Right.
There's a lot of absurdity in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess I just have such fond memories of Red Alert 2, like doing almost like griefing to each other over lands, you know, like where you just try really ridiculous strategies, and when you pull them off, it's just like some of the most fun you can have, like NG rushes or like dog rushing or like just like chrono commandos and just all the ridiculous stuff that you could do. And I'm hoping that Red Alert 3 definitely has some serious griefing potential.
Well, one thing that they are encouraging here is that you grief the computer rather than other players because they have the co-op.
Yeah, I've heard of the co-op thing. That sounds really fun.
Right. It is. They did pull it off very well, I gotta say.
Word. All right.
Moving on a little bit. Not to pimp our issue too much. We got to move on to pimping our issue, because the cover story on that, we can't say what it is yet. But it is the same game that BioWare and LucasArts are taking the wraps off of the Tuesday after next, which is the 21st. We wish we could tell you what it is, but that would spoil a surprise on the 21st, and then again on the 23rd when some subscribers will start getting our issue in the mail. You know, it's about time they announce this, and it's really kind of a bummer that we can't talk about it, because even the CEO of EA can't keep his mouth shut about it. It's really like one of the worst kept secrets, but you know, we've got the first look at it, so we hope you'll enjoy that. Keep your eyes open on the 21st, and you'll get an idea of what it's going to be. And so in other news related to developers, starting with the letter B, Blizzard right now is hosting their annual BlizzCon event in Anaheim, California, which explains why our local WoW crazy person, Andy Salisbury, is not here. He's down there right now. Evan, you were reading about the new class announcement?
Yes, they just announced it this afternoon. It's the Wizard, apparently.
And this is for Diablo 3, not for WoW.
Yeah, Diablo 3. And they showed off a quick trailer of some of their abilities, five abilities: Disintegrate, Electrocute, Teleport, Magic Missile, and Slow Time. Kind of some basic stuff. The effects, like Electrocute kind of operates how you'd expect, like you just zap a bunch of skeletons, kind of like Chain Lightning.
I actually just have one question. I cast Magic Missile into the darkness?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I know
that I'm sold. You know, I think like this is the most compelling class so far for me, just because I like to get in and zap things. I mean, hitting things is fun, yes, but not as much fun as zapping for me. I'm more of a zapper.
Definitely the slow time ability looked kind of interesting. Basically, you cast this field, this three-dimensional field that effects are like, I guess, like spells that enter that field or enemies that enter that field slow down, so you can sort of dodge them and avoid them. Seems like it would add a more active element to the gameplay, so that's interesting.
That makes it a little easier to dodge.
Yes, it does.
I guess if I get the wizard with the raised wall of undead that the shaman has, then I'd be all over that. Can I mix and match?
I hope so. That'd be nice. Everybody loves a wall of zombies.
They like to dole out the information on their games like in bits and pieces, but they still throw a hell of a party down there.
The one other thing I spotted was in their swag bag that everybody gets, they gave everybody a key to a future Blizzard beta, a game for a, excuse me, a code for a future Blizzard beta, I guess.
They did that last year.
Yeah.
I suspect it will probably end up being the Diablo 3 beta. I mean, they always give themselves some wiggle room there, but unless they're going to announce another WoW expansion, I mean, that's pretty much. Or it could also
StarCraft
be a StarCraft 2 beta. What am I thinking?
Yeah, but, I mean, so, one of those two. For me, it's just if they're having those out, it's the timing. For Diablo 3, I wouldn't expect that until
the next BlizzCon, maybe.
Yeah, it's hard to say with Blizzard, but I wouldn't expect it until late next year at the earliest, almost.
It's very hard to say. I mean, it looks very far along, though, is the thing.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised to see the game come out at the end of next year. Of course, you know, again, it is Blizzard, so it could be 2 years from now, for all we know. Last week, we completely forgot to mention that EA has officially canned Command & Conquer Tiberium, which I guess breaks a lot of hearts out there, because, you know, it did look like it had potential. Personally, when I saw it, I wasn't that excited about it. I was kind of hoping it would be another CNC Renegade, which that game was very flawed, yes, but, you know, just being able to run around amongst the vehicles and units you knew from CNC was great. The difference with this one that kind of let me down, that, you know, had me not as excited about it, was that they set it like 30 years after CNC 3, so like all the units looked different, and, you know, it didn't really have that connection to it. But you know, it still looked like it could have been fun. I'm you know, it's always sad to see a game canceled that, like, say has potential, but you know, it raises a topic like the ones Evan likes to discuss, which is, you know, what game cancellation broke your heart?
Ooh, very nice, actually.
Oh,
wow.
And Tim, when Brutal Legend, when they said it wasn't going to come out for the PC, which we now think it will.
That's not really a cancellation, though, because they hadn't announced it in the first place.
I think it's a cancellation. It broke my heart.
You can't cancel that which has never been announced. Or, well, you know, you can, but you can't cancel what has ever been promised, I guess, is the idea.
Very well.
So, what game has been promised that was canceled? Evan, do you have one?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one recently that really let me down.
I came up with a few notable ones that bothered me. I mean, like, there was Warcraft Adventures, I guess. That was one that was on our cover at one point.
Yeah,
and
I was like, is someone going to bring up that? Warcraft Adventures.
Yeah, and there's also StarCraft Ghost, you know, which...
But that was never going to come to PC, though.
It was initially, and then it was going to be console, and then not at all. So, but, you know, that was a sad tale. For me personally, the original version of Fallout 3, when they canceled that was heartbreaking. Dreamland Chronicles, which was going to be an XCOM-style game by the guys that did XCOM, that was canceled. And then eventually, I guess it was kind of rolled into the... I forget what the subtitle of that one was, but it was kind of blah. That was canceled. There was also another XCOM, like an XCOM game that was actually going to be an XCOM titled game called XCOM Genesis that was going to be kind of a remake that never happened. I saw a couple of screenshots from that. That was like 5 or 6 years ago, maybe more.
Wasn't there supposed to be XCOM Alliance?
There was, but I wasn't that disappointed by that not coming out, because that was a shooter, and, you know, it takes place in the universe, yes, but, like, I mean, XCOM Enforcer was in the XCOM universe, but that was kind of a joke. So, yeah, I wasn't too upset by that.
Right.
Other ones, like there's Star Trek Secret of Vulcan Fury, which Chuck was really gung-ho about that one. He was always wondering, like, do they still have, like, the assets for that lying around somewhere? Because it was, like, the last performance of DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy before he died.
Oh, my goodness.
So he probably sounded like hell, but you know, it would have been nice for that to see the light of day. And apparently there was, you know, some good story work behind it that was promising. And recently there was Marvel Online that was canceled by Microsoft. Cryptic. and Microsoft was doing it with Cryptic.
Yeah, I played StarCraft Ghost at E3 2006, and it was not memorable. It was in bad shape. It's like a third-person action game, and just, I don't know. I'm pretty glad they put the lid on that. But if I remember correctly, they said recently that they had canceled certain projects, and all they could say was that the StarCraft Ghost was not among them, so they sort of left the door open to...
It is indefinitely postponed, basically, so it's not officially canned. And you know, like, every studio has probably several projects they've started work on that ended up being canceled. But, you know, we're just talking about stuff that, that we thought was coming that ended up not coming.
You know, I was going to say that actually I don't have any particular games on my list, probably because it's a lot worse to me when a game comes out that that's highly anticipated that ends up stinking. You know what I mean? Like I can live with a game that gets canceled, even though it's disappointing. It's just so, to me, it's eons worse when you've been waiting for something for a long time and it comes out and it's just awful. And you wish they had canceled it instead.
What would be an example of that?
That is a good question. Let's see. Can you guys think of any?
The obvious one is Daikatana.
Yeah, I guess that is the obvious one. I mean, I think a lot of people probably feel that way about Age of Conan.
A lot of people feel that way about every game.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, people felt that way about Half-Life 2.
The Matrix Online was huge disappointment for me.
Well, you know, we gave it an 81, I think. You know, I think that one was a victim of the movies coming out and destroying all enthusiasm for the franchise. It's like nobody wanted to live there anymore.
I think people felt that way about Lord of the Rings Online when it first came out as well. Look, we're naming all MMOs. That's interesting.
It's just hard to conjure them at the moment.
Yeah, we tend to erase them from our memory banks.
Right.
The original 7X was canceled. That was devastating to me,
well,
too.
It was the original sequel.
Yeah.
Right. That was Freelance Police, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say that was devastating to me when Sam and Max Freelance Police got canceled. But it's cool now because, you know, Telltale
got to
do their thing, and it's been fantastic. So
yeah,
it's been pretty frustrating the amount of time that Duke Nukem has been hanging in the balance.
Right. Although
it doesn't technically count as a cancellation, but it just seems to be kind of dragging on and on and on.
Right. That's kind of vaporware territory, although apparently it exists. So I guess Dan Morris and Greg Veerman had seen it running. You know, a couple of years ago. So who knows what state it's in now. I guess, you know, they've had a couple of shots leaking out here and there.
They just released the original Duke Nukem 3D on Xbox Live, and included in that was, like, some concept art for the new one, I guess, if I remember correctly. So that's something.
There's been plenty of concept art.
So, yeah.
You know, that's getting from the concept to reality stage.
It does not a game make.
So, I guess, could you say that the original Team Fortress 2 was canceled? Because it was completely revamped.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
They iterated on that so many times. I mean, and for the better, I think. But, I mean, it took 8 or 9 years for them to develop that, for sure.
Right. We had screenshots. We printed screenshots, like, 6 or 7 years ago, I think, of you know, realistic styled Team Fortress 2. Where, like, people were, there was, like, machine gunners, and like, a person would, second person would come up and belt feed the machine gun to increase the rate of fire, and, you know, there were some neat ideas in there, but I guess they just felt that it wasn't distinct enough from every other shooter out there. So.
And it seems like that'll be the right decision in the long run. I can't see that kind of art style really wearing, I mean, 5 or 10 years down the line, even, that it'll just seem fresh because it's so lively, the animations are great. Just really colorful, accessible.
Yeah, stylized art ages much, much better. But yep. But moving on a little bit, we've got a couple other things on the schedule here. I guess the Tom Clancy's End War, which I know Evan was excited about, just based on it's a voice controlled RTS kind of thing. It's not a pure RTS, but it was announced as console only. But now Ubisoft is hinting that it may come to PC, just not, you know, concurrently with the console release. And what they've been saying is that piracy is the reason for that. And, you know, frankly, if they're willing to put it out on the PC just, you know, a little bit later, just to avoid piracy, because, you know, PC is easier to pirate. Although, you know, ask Bethesda if, you know, if that's really helping, because Fallout 3, I guess the console version was leaked out. From somewhere, then they're tracking down where it came from. But consoles are not piracy-proof, is the point. But anyway, if the only consequence of piracy on the PC is that the game comes out a couple months later, I'm totally fine with that. That's worth waiting for.
No, I agree.
Yeah, and you know, hopefully it won't be like a GTA situation where it takes them 6 months, but. You know, it's nice that they're at least considering putting the game that would not otherwise have come to the PC on the PC.
I just, yeah, you can't, you got to think they want it to happen in that market. A lot of my, our console colleagues, I guess, are, have been really excited about it, said that the voice control actually just works. You know, that's surprising. So
no, that would be surprising if it actually works. So many attempts at voice control have failed miserably. It would be great to see somebody finally get it right. So Google is not buying Valve. We've pretty much established that. But what they are doing to get into the games market is to offer AdSense, which is their kind of very flexible system for letting people put ads in their content. They're offering that for casual games, or web-based casual games, which is a pretty cool system, I think. And it, you know, for it makes people, it lets people who develop web games, you know, reap some real rewards for that if they get a lot of traffic, which that's only a good thing, I think.
That's awesome.
Yeah, especially when Google's ads are very unobtrusive. I mean, they're usually the little text-based things that don't get in your way.
And you got to think this is just another platform, essentially. It just gives developers, any developers, another avenue to publish their games that isn't Steam, that isn't Impulse, that isn't Greenhouse. So it's great for sure.
Well, it's a web platform, which, you know, it's for web games, not for games that you would download off of Steam or Greenhouse or anything like that. So it's a game that you would load up in your browser. Like, I forget what it was called, the zombie game I was playing a lot. Crap! But it's just a game that loads in the browser, usually Flash based. Yep. And yeah, so if they do that, and there are more of those games, then you know, our productivity will fall even more. but you know, and in cases like that, then, you know, maybe somebody has a big hit web based, so they put out a full standalone game based on that idea. So, you know, growth for the industry all around, good thing. One thing we're not at all sure is a good thing. Not sure if we even really understand the business thinking behind it. Is AMD just announced that they're splitting the company in half, and I guess they're spinning off the fabrication end of their business, where they actually make the chips that go into the CPUs and their GPUs into a separate company. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't. I don't understand the thinking behind it. You know, like, why that's a business decision. It seems like an expensive move for a company that needs to be competitive more than ever.
I mean, you kind of just want to chalk it up to the economic situation recently, but it's hard to do that.
It can't be. It's too sudden for that. I mean, it's like that happened like 2 weeks ago, and they couldn't break up a company in 2 weeks. So I think it's probably some, you know, crazy economic game. AMD will maintain like a 44% stake, which is, you know, the majority share in the new company. Which probably I think I read somewhere somebody's analysis of it, where it allows them to raise money by selling off a big chunk of that company.
Oh, interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Hello, do we have an MBA in the house? Hello.
Yeah, this is all kind of outside of our area of expertise, but I mean, I really doubt they would do this if it would affect their ability to continue putting out CPUs and GPUs. So for end users like us, you know, I doubt it's going to make any difference.
Nope, AMD is going to continue to be hammered throughout the year.
Well, I mean, you got to be fair. I'm sure their 48 series is doing pretty well, isn't it?
They're just, you know, going to get hammered throughout the year with Intel's Larrabee chips coming out. It's not going to be a pretty year for AMD at all. But yeah, I don't understand the business behind splitting up the design from the fabrication. You know, we'll definitely keep an eye out on it.
How much of a problem is that, like, in the long term or even in the short term for consumers? Or does it, you know, does it have any bearing?
I don't think any at all. Not for the short term, certainly. I doubt it will even affect prices at all.
Hi, PC Gamer Podcast staff. I am in the market for a laptop computer, and I'm looking for one that's more or less under $1,500, but still comes with a graphics card instead of the Intel integrated graphics. Could you recommend one to me? Thanks.
Yeah, my current favorite under $1,500 right now is Gateway's P-7811FX. I reviewed it in the, I believe it was November issue, And it's $13.99, and it's got an unbelievable amount of power. We were getting something like, I think on medium settings in Crysis, almost 30 frames per second, which is amazing. This is a laptop, you know? And it costs, it's under $1,400. I think it's a fantastic deal. Not so wild about the copper color and all that business, but I just think it's fantastic. And that's that. There you go.
Hey there, PC Gamer. This is Adam, Perth, West Australia. Thanks so much for the podcast. I really, really enjoy it. Look forward to it every week. I've got a question for you. I love playing computer games, and so does my 10-year-old son, Oliver. And we would like to play together, but the only way that we've done in the past is against each other, playing a lot of real-time strategy stuff like Battle for Middle-earth, Empire Earth, Age of Empires. I'm looking for something we can play together against the computer over LAN. Could you suggest a game that's not too violent, looking for, you know, RTS, RPG, action games? So I look forward to your response. Thank you.
That was probably his son being violent in the background. That's really what it sounded like.
Oh my goodness.
But the perfect game for this guy is Red Alert 3, and it's a co-op RTS. So that would be the first one to go for there. I guess Lego Batman is also co-op, but it's not a RTS or RPG, really.
Yeah, the only qualifier, he said over a LAN, if that's what I heard him say. I don't know if he means over a LAN, but you can't play Lego Batman over a connection. You have to play it locally, multiplayer. But it's perfect otherwise. I mean, it's co-op. It's really fun, perfect for two people solving puzzles and stuff. So
kid safe.
I was thinking, Dan, because maybe some people might be confused about the Red Alert 3 co-op, because at first I was like, well, you can always play a skirmish with, you know, two people against
the computer. But it's not really the same thing.
Yeah, so explain maybe, like, the campaign is built so you can have a second person jump in and play.
Right. All of the missions in all three campaigns are built with two players in mind. If you're playing with single player, there's an allied AI-controlled player in there with you. So when a second person jumps in, it's just, you know, you're filling those shoes.
Hi, guys. It's Zachary Keyes from North Carolina. I have a question about game journalism. Now, I've been a gamer my entire life, and I follow the news as far as things like release dates go. But in the past few years, I really started looking at the industry a bit more deeply and following it as far as analysis of the industry goes. And I started my blog a couple of months ago, and I found that I really enjoyed writing about this stuff that I love, but I'd also really like to get paid for it. So my question is, how does one go about getting to that point? Nowadays, do you need a degree specifically in journalism before you can be considered as a viable writer? Or is it more that they need to be able to reference your previous work via your blog and know that you can write with some skill about the topic? I look forward to hearing your guys' thoughts on the matter, considering that I can't really think of anybody who'd be better placed to comment on it. And keep up the great work. It's an awesome podcast. Thanks.
Does anyone else want to cover that one? Evan is actually the only person here who does have a journalism degree.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. No, it's actually much. We don't care what degree you have or don't have. It's just it's how well you can write. So if you can supply us with, you know, a bunch of material that suggests that you can cover the topic well and you get tested out and you perform well, then any number of outlets would be willing to hire you.
And I've got to say, I mean, I know there's just tons of people that maintain their own personal blogs, gaming blogs, they do it with friends, or they create gaming sites. I really recommend to people that are interested in, you know, pursuing some level of professional career, just freelancing or whatever, on games, work under someone, have something other than your own personal blog, because even professional bloggers like Kotaku, they make a lot of mistakes. It's not really the most ideal environment for developing good writing habits necessarily when you're writing for quantity and to get a lot of traffic and, you know, draw a lot of attention with headlines and whatnot, rather than, you know, writing more polished pieces that, you know, you have time to invest a lot of fact-checking and research in. So I'd say just, you know, writing under constraints that you're not comfortable with in terms of time and content and style, even, are really a good way of growing as a writer in general. So
And one thing that editors look for is writing that is not going to be a lot of work for us to clean up, to have it be presentable. So we get some stuff that's a lot of misspelled words, bad grammar, that kind of thing. It just makes more work for editors. So since we're all lazy, we would rather have writers like Andy Mahood is the example of a godlike writer who you barely have to touch what he writes.
Mm-hmm. And I've got to add also that, especially on the print side, but on the online side, just having some kind of understanding of visual design, how people read articles, how a character on a page should be, why he should be facing a certain direction rather than another direction. Like, just knowing, I was the design editor on my college newspaper. It was really weird and hard, and I wasn't really familiar with it, but I did it anyway. And it's just been such a helpful experience and understanding, just thinking visually, basically, not just thinking, okay, I'm playing a game, this is my review, and that's all I have to think about. I have to think about, what Dan's reviewing, what's going to be on the next page. I have to think in the context of the entire section, the entire publication, rather than just, emphasizing specific stuff on the game, which I have to do too, so.
Although, if you're just a writer, you don't really have to worry about that too much.
Right, but just having a broader perspective, having a broader context for your work is important, I think.
Evan, we know you got your comeuppance doing freelance stuff for, it was like a newspaper or something, wasn't it?
I don't know if that's getting your comeuppance. That means
right.
that means something different.
Oh,
well, yes, it was.
That is start doing.
Getting
that.
Your start you in, well the, in the writing. Right.
Cut my teeth. Yeah.
There you go. Is there any other how did you jump in there and get going on that? And do you have any advice for people trying to do that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to go through the whole chronology, but basically, I was a freshman in college, and there was a group of us that this is back when E3 was still. It wasn't open to the public, but you could find ways of getting in, if you're a GameStop employee. But basically, we formed a group to sort of get ourselves into E3. And I went to school in Illinois, so it was a big deal to fly us out there and everything. And we paid for it, but in the meantime, I found just a site that I could write to contribute some impressions of the event for. And that was just seek out any experience you can. And I sort of continued when I was writing for that site, just doing everything, daily news updates to features to interviews to previews, and just accept any experience that you can is what I encourage people to do. In terms of freelancing, there's a lot better books online and stuff that and articles online that can explain it better than I can. But basically, it's a process of tracking down contacts and getting really detailed, excellent article ideas and feature ideas and pitching them to people and just constantly pitching a high volume of stuff to different editors and different outlets, so you're getting some level of return and some level of response. It's pretty grueling to start out as a freelancer, I think, if you don't have established people in the industry that you're friends with, that you've written for before. But, you can do it for sure. It only took me, really, 2 or 3 years to get to where I am now.
That's pretty good advice. Just, send your ideas and your samples around and see if anybody wants to hire you.
Hey, PC Gamer crew, this is Chris from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hi, I'm calling because I've heard some rumors, and I figured you guys would be best to dissuade them or encourage them. I have heard the following old games are going to get a new lease on life, a reimagining or a new game, if you will. They're Wing Commander, Privateer, XCOM, and Star Control. I was wondering if you guys could answer those questions on whether they will be coming back, and look back and any fond memories you may have of these games, just let us know. Be interested in hearing you. Thank you. Bye.
I don't think there's anything there we can confirm or deny. There have been plenty of rumors. We've all seen the same rumors on those games, basically, if we say we know anything, if we did know anything and we said we knew something, then the people that told us would never tell us anything again. So, the things we know that aren't announced, we can't really talk about. We just know them because we need to plan in advance, when we're going to cover something. So, yeah, we can't share that information, unfortunately.
Wing Commander is one I definitely want to see, though. I mean, it's just funny. I think about in 1994, this is the most expensive game produced in that time. It's hard to believe that's the case. But, I mean, has EA retained a lot of the Origin people from Origin Systems?
Kind of doubt it. I mean, there might be a few in there, but I mean, there's quite a bit of turnover there.
What's Chris Roberts doing these days?
No idea.
Me neither. I'm really curious.
I would love to see a Wing Commander game, an X-Wing game, and any of those space action flight sims would be awesome.
Yeah, they need to revive the whole genre of space sim flight game.
Yeah, and even those weren't like space sims.
Mostly shooters, you know.
XCOM had a few like simish aspects to it where you're adjusting the power levels around your ship, but that's as in-depth as it got, and there was no realistic physics or anything like that. So I hesitate to call them sims, but action space flight games.
I mean, there is a pretty serious vacuum for that. Even something like EVE Online, as much as it has, you know, it's pretty much based around space combat and trade systems and whatnot, the combat isn't really nuanced enough to really justify any kind of, like, you don't need a joystick, for example. So,
well, there is Jumpgate Evolution. Which is, you know, it's an MMO, but it is that style of game.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's hoping that Firefly, the MMO, does us justice.
But that's another one like Kristen was talking about, where, you know, if it doesn't look like it's going to be awesome, I hope they cancel.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, the problem with the Firefly MMO, everybody would play the
Serenity.
Genetically engineered psychic that could kill everybody. Class.
Oh, right.
You wouldn't want to play the space prostitute?
Well,
I mean, come on.
I'll think it over.
She's a companion, Dan.
So I guess that will do it for the questions portion. For playlists, we've got some interesting stuff to cover. I've seen Evan playing Portal Prelude over there behind me.
Yes, that's been the case. I have some interesting impressions of them. I've been really trying to give it as best of a chance I could. It just released yesterday, by the way. Basically, I mean, it's a French group of modders that produced it. There's like 19 chambers, which I think compares to the 13 in Portal 1. It's about the same length in time, I'm told. I haven't finished it. I'm about halfway through. But stylistically, it's sort of designed to be a much more hardcore, very non-casual experience. They stated that themselves on their website, kind of belligerently, actually.
like trying to talk it up a bit?
Like basically, I don't know. I don't want to get into this too much, but they took a criticism from an email they got, and they posted it on their front page and said, and just basically called out the guy and said he was totally wrong. It's just really unprofessional and inappropriate. Okay, that being said, but really the only thing I need people to know about this game is the moment you come in. Okay, you know how when you start Portal, you're in this, like...
Oh, I think I saw this on your Twitter.
Yeah, you're in like a little life chamber, basically.
Yeah.
And there's like a little like space bed, and there's a radio. The first thing you hear is "Rock Me Like a Hurricane" by the Scorpions. No joke. Okay, like
if that's not Portal, man.
Guys,
wait a minute.
Okay, for a game like this is. I mean, otherwise it's trying to be very faithful, but that's wildly inappropriate. Like, way out of context. I don't like it.
I kind of think it's hilarious.
Okay. Atmosphere aside, though, how is the quality of the level design? Because that's what really matters in a Portal game. It's like how difficult are the puzzles? Will it keep me? You know, will it break my brain?
Absolutely. I mean, that's more important to me too. I guess I'd say in general, it lacks a lot of the subtlety. It lacks a lot of the room. It doesn't really build room for you to be creative. Basically, I tend to think. I look up to Portal as sort of a beacon of like the economy of level design. I mean, how you can just give a player a basic looking room, but just going through that process of discovering, like, just having that like that moment where you feel clever because you discover what you could do. Portal Prelude is really more about being very precise, being like almost like twitchy, like in the shooter aspects of it. Level 9, which I'm uploading a YouTube video of myself playing it and how frustrating it is. So I'll post that for you guys in the comments or later. Basically, you have to like leapfrog these portals by, you have to jump down and then drop one, then shoot down again and fall into that one, shoot into that one. And then when you do that, you finally get high enough, you have to shoot over this transparent wall. And it's like the margin of error is so slim that it comes down to you being accurate enough. It's like basically all the stages up until that point. It's a matter of you know how to solve this puzzle. It's just a matter of are you skilled enough to execute it, which apparently I'm not skilled enough. And it doesn't reintroduce the concepts gradually enough. It's just really not very satisfying so far. So,
well, I mean, it does bill itself as an advanced thing. It is probably not for the portal faint of heart. You can't really say it's flawed because it's not like going through the tutorials again and introducing all like how to do everything, because I mean I think they probably intend for you to play that like right after Portal, right after playing some advanced Portal puzzles, and like everything in Portal after you've gone through all that, then this is something else you can do. And that's probably the philosophy they approached it from.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I totally agree. Like, I totally respect, like, they want to make a hardcore Portal game. I'm not asking them to, you know, baby me at all. It's just a matter of what they're introducing. You know, the puzzles themselves are not very satisfying. I mean, the first one that you do, you're in this very narrow room, you're walking out, and you're like, okay, well, I guess I have to, there's four turrets, like, right in front of you looking at you, so you're like, okay, I guess I have to shoot on the ceiling and then sort of awkwardly drop down and disable them, and that's all you do. There's nothing more creative. I just have not had a mind-bending moment where I'm like, oh, wow, I felt, like, creative, I felt empowered, I felt, like, a sense of tempo with the portals. Like, I've had none of that so far, and that's what I'm looking for, I guess.
Well, I mean, not to defend it too much, but it just seems.
Of course.
I mean, it's like in the Matrix, like the first one blew your mind because it's like, whoa, that I didn't see that coming. That's, you know, the Matrix is, you know, crazy, and then the next one, it's like, the Matrix is there now. Show me something new, even though it's dealing with the same concept. So, it's hard to surprise somebody with the same tricks twice.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't address the Scorpions issue.
That does not address Rocky Like a Hurricane, no.
It's frankly unforgivable, yeah.
So Logan, what are you playing?
Oh, it's Hell's Highway and Fallout 3. Yeah, I mean, literally, seriously, 45 minutes of one, 45 minutes of the other, repeat.
Wait, that's not fair.
Yeah, all right. So Kristen, what are you playing?
I've actually been playing some of the Quake Live beta. Which I'm having a good time with, but which I have discovered in the years between the last time I was playing that game and now, I've gotten no better at it. I'm just as bad at it as I was before, but I still have a good time playing it. So
not practice does not make perfect?
No, as it turns out.
That's shocking.
And I have played some Crisis Warhead, but mostly I'm looking forward to Fallout 3, to be perfectly frank. Or to be perfectly Kristen.
Yeah. Good. How about you, Andy?
I've been playing Peggle Knights and A Crisis Warhead. And I recommend Peggle Knights. At first I was like, this is the same in the adventure mode, but once you get to the challenges are a lot, you still get the same rush of excitement and they're a lot harder. So
you're saying I would get the same complete lack of excitement that I got from the first one?
Maybe you should give it another chance, Dan. How often do you fist pump your air or fist pump the air, like in a day? Would you say?
I try and limit myself to, you know, two or three max.
Well, if you played Peggle
Knights, would triple that.
Yeah, maybe even quadruple.
I don't want to overdo it. You know, you can injure yourself doing that. I'm very fragile.
Okay, fair enough then.
Yeah. So I've been playing a bunch of stuff that I can't really talk about. So yeah,
damn it.
Red Alert 3, Fallout 3, and I just started a little Far Cry 2, but I can't say much about those yet, I'm afraid.
Well,
but,
when's the release date of Fallout 3?
October 28th.
Cool. Coming up quick. Yeah.
Mark your calendars. All right, folks, we have got to, I guess, complete the shipping the issue process here. I think there are probably a few things left to be done there. So until next week, I am Dan Stapleton. We've got Evan Lottie, Kristen Salvatore, Logan Decker, and Andy Bauman. We'll see you guys next time. In the meantime, you can go to gamesradar.com/PC and look for the subscribe button. You can also email us questions at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Andy, what's the number they can call to leave a message?
1-877-404-1337, extension 724.
All right. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
Adios. Later.
Hello, PC Gamer Podcast. This is ex-intern Andy Salisbury calling in an absentee podcast seat, calling you directly from Anaheim, California at BlizzCon 2008, and I'm here with all the cool announcements. StarCraft III will be three separate parts as far as the single-player campaign is concerned. Diablo III is fun, and I'm playing it, and StarCraft II still looks great. We had the world's first StarCraft II tournament, and other than that, it's just about as cool as it can be here. I will talk to you guys next week. Take care.
And that was Logan opening a beverage. I hope you all heard that.
It wasn't my beverage.
What is it?
Whose beverage was that? I heard a loud beverage opening.
What is it? I want some.
You need a drink, detective.
Yeah. So where were we?
It happens when they change things.
Yeah, just when Logan and Andy were talking at the same time, it glitched for me. But whatever.
Have you ever seen us in the same room at the same time?
No, come to think of it, I have not.
It's one of those situations.
It's really one of the worst kept secrets in the industry, and I can hear a major echo now. What's going on?
I don't hear it.
Have no echo.
Yeah. Really?
There's weird stuff going on our end. Like, you keep dropping out for me, but apparently it's fine for everyone else, so...
No, you're dropping out for me, too, but I haven't said anything because you did seem to be dropping out for Andy.
Yeah, now the...
Andy, do you want to just drop the call and start and call us back in?
Yeah, I will.
All right.
I'm thinking, like, you know, they're deduced.
All right.
And that's... I mean, Larrabee's... Intel's Larrabee chips are going to come out, and they are going to be devastating.
Logan, are you, like, downloading something?
No. I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah, that was really garbled.
Like, it just sounds like there's not enough bandwidth on your computer.
Yeah, no, there's no action going on in the background here.
This is, like, the worst Skype thing ever.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, I don't know what's the problem. Who knows?
I blame Logan.
Could be the economy. They had to shut down like half their servers because the economy tanked, probably. And then
The problem is that Logan hurt his foot, and that is directly affecting his
bandwidth.
Yeah,
I broke my bandwidth.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Andy.
See ya.
Yeah.
Thanks, Andy.
Have a good weekend.